The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of a mature age, because let's face it, we have potty mouth on the show.
You damn fucking right we do.
You're right. The Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network and the Rant Network. Of course, as always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm joined by...
The Mega Powers.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. Just waiting for this week to end. Getting ready for SummerSlam. I always get excited about SummerSlam.
And yeah, I'm kind of excited about SummerSlam. I don't really know what's happening other than CM Punk versus Brock, but, you know, it seems like a solid, you know, main event, and SummerSlam is probably my favorite of the throwback pay-per-views of yore.
I was at the first SummerSlam, as I was telling you in pre-production. Thank you to my friend Dennis and Velma. The Thornton family actually took me when I was in junior high school, and I was like 8 or 9 rows from ringside. I sat near Sugar Ray Leonard, and that's where your namesake came to pass.
Yeah.
The Mega Powers met the Mega Bucks.
Amazing main event.
Yep, and then the Ultimate Warrior taking the title from Honky Tonk Man as I put my soda down, picked my head up, and the match was over. You know.
And we'll be talking a little bit about that match. You know, I would change it a little bit.
yep, absolutely. But getting back to SummerSlam, I'm one of those guys that still buys like 3 or 4 pay-per-views a year, and this is one of the pay-per-views I buy. I have probably every one of them on DVD. I think it's you know, you had in WCW, you had your Bash at the Beach, you had your Beach Blast, which we're doing tonight, and you had SummerSlam. And you had the Great American Bash. Those were your summer staples for a very, very, very long time. And this year's SummerSlam, Dave, believe it or not, kind of has that throwback feeling to it. Because I think almost every match on the card had a real decent build-up for the last couple of, I want to say, 6 to 8 weeks.
Really?
No, I'm not even exaggerating, dude. At least I'm looking at the card now, and I want to say, outside of the women's match and the U.S. title match, which is not even on the card, it's like the, you know, the free for all, the giveaway, like they put it on YouTube.
But yeah,
I say a third of the card had a decent build up. I'll run down the card real quick for all our current fans of because we have a lot of fans on the Facebook page that still follow the current product. Of course, the opening match is going to be U.S. champion Dean Ambrose of The Shield fighting Rob Van Dam. And Rob,
wow.
Rob Van Dam is still at 40 plus years old, still can go. He had a classic match last week against Alberto Del Rio. Rob's going to be one of those guys, like Jericho's been the past couple of months, coming in, you know, putting the young guys over. And that's pretty much it. I don't see Rob winning any belts anytime soon, you know?
Yeah, plus, you know, he's held, you know, almost every world championship. The guy's done it all, you know, at this point, especially a guy like Dean Ambrose, who, you know, I saw him at Dragon Gate USA as John Moxley.
As John Moxley, yeah.
So that was my exposure to him, and, you know, the guy's amazing talent. I'm not surprised that he's, you know, U.S. champion. Let's just hope that they aren't doing to him what they did to Claudio Castagnoli, you know. So, I'm actually going to be looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Natalia fights Brie Bella. no one cares unless you follow the fucking Divas, the Divas reality show that's going on right now. They're all a part of that.
Yeah, I'll pass.
Yeah, Cody Rhodes fighting Damian Sandow. I'm a big Damian Sandow guy. I picked him as my next Dolph Ziggler, my next breakout guy. He's actually the current SmackDown Money in the Bank winner. He's fighting his former partner, who is Cody Rhodes. Again, I'll have no problem with this. Dolph Ziggler is in a mixed tag with Caitlyn against Biggie Langston and AJ Lee. The Wyatt family, Bray Wyatt, you know those freaking.
You know, some of these names are like new to me.
Yeah,
so. I do remember Brody Lee, who's in the Wyatt family.
Yeah,
but
and
I don't know the names of the other guys.
Well,
you know,
Husky,
staying.
If you followed a couple years ago when they had the Nexus angle.
Yeah.
The kid Husky Harris. He's
IRS's kid.
Right. He's Bray Wyatt. He's the Wyatt family. It's like a knockoff of Waylon Mercy.
Okay.
Waylon Mercy meets what was that Alfred Hitchcock movie that De Niro redid?
No, that wasn't a Hitchcock movie.
Cape
I know what you're
Fear.
Talking about Cape Fear. Yeah,
Cape
that's not
Fear
that's not
it wasn't
Hitchcock.
It was I was thinking of another actor that was in another movie, but yeah, it's Cape Fear meets Waylon Mercy meets like Fry.
Deliverance.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
So Funkhouse Buck, probably not, but
right. So Bray Wyatt's fighting Kane in a Ring of Fire match. You know how Phil feels about the gimmick matches. I love them. And
yes.
Del Rio's fighting Christian for the World Heavyweight Championship. Brock Lesnar. Yeah, that's gonna be a good match. Christian can still work, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. He held the belt not too long ago. So.
Yeah, no. Before he got hurt, he was world champion. So I mean, you know, it's a little another guy who was putting the other guys over. You know, the old guys. That's cool. You know.
Yeah.
That's for the World Heavyweight Championship.
But I gotta say, it's like amazing to hear that Christian is now like an old guy because you know I still think you know the old guys are like Hogan and Macho Man and all that. So you know, for me, Christian is still like a new wrestler, and I feel the same way about RVD too. Like they're still too new for me.
Yeah.
Granted, they're totally not, but still.
And of course, CM Punk is fighting Brock Lesnar. This was a really good build-up. This was, you know, of course, Paul Heyman turning on Punk, and now Punk is the face. You know, David versus Goliath. It doesn't even look believable, but it, you know, that David and Goliath thing in wrestling always works. Always,
yeah.
Always works. Always.
Especially when you really have, you know, you got somebody like CM Punk who's in the David role. You know, my namesake.
Right.
You know, like he's you know, proven himself time and time again. So, you know, at this point, it's you're not just throwing anybody in there. You're not throwing a David Sammartino into there. So, you know, it's going to work out.
Right. So SummerSlam and then is going to be main evented by John Cena versus Daniel Bryan. Special guest referee is Triple H. There's a side, I guess, a side note to this where the McMahons are feuding within each other in terms of who they think should represent the company as champion. Vince doesn't want Cena. The other guys, Stephanie and Triple H, don't want, you know, Daniel Bryan because of his look. So there's a underlined feud there going on. So there's a lot of interesting things. Again, it's a good card. You know, it's actually, for the first time, it's really good. So
it sounds like it's pretty stacked.
On paper, anyway. So let's hope we can all get together this
weekend
and check that out. But what were some of your favorite SummerSlam matches? Can you recall any of them?
Well, first off, SummerSlam, I think I may have said this. If I didn't, I'm just going to repeat it. You know, SummerSlam is my favorite WWF pay-per-view of the year. You know, we did SummerSlam 91. That's my all-time favorite WWF pay-per-view. And, you know, doesn't matter what time of the year, it always feels right to pop in, you know, some of the, you know, first five, you know, going up to 92 SummerSlams. And, shit, some of my favorites, one right off the top of my head, Rick Rude defending the Intercontinental title against the Ultimate Warrior. That was a fucking awesome match. And, you know, the fact with, you know, Piper coming out at the end and fucking pulling up his skirt.
Oh, you mean SummerSlam 1990?
Yeah, 90.
When you fought him in the cage.
No. Oh, yeah, 90 was the cage, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that was great. I remember specifically one of my standout moments from that cage match was, like, his face paint was peeling, but I wasn't, like, since I was a kid, you know, I thought, like, he had, like, this big, like, booger snot coming out of his nose, and then Heenan slammed the door on him, and I'm like, thank God, like, I couldn't stand looking at that huge, like, booger coming out. But later on, you know, once the DVDs came out, I was like, oh, it's just his face paint peeling off.
Right. I mean, of course, the first one's my favorite, the main event. Then you had the big no-holds-barred match the year after that with Hogan and Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus.
Yeah, but that was just for the no-holds-barred pay-per-view.
Right, but that was the main event in 89.
Yes.
You know? We did SummerSlam 91. That was a fun one of our fun shows. The Bret Hart Bulldog thing was cool from England. That was fun.
Bret who?
Well, you're not a big Bret Hart guy.
Absolutely not. The guy is so overrated, it hurts.
I thought the Shawn Michaels Vader thing was cool from 96.
That's a good match.
The Rock and Brock from 2002 was fantastic. It was actually local. I saw that over at the Nassau Mausoleum.
The mausoleum?
Yeah, if you're a Ranger fan, you refer to the Coliseum as the mausoleum because Islanders play there. It's a hockey thing.
Man, that reminds me, another great SummerSlam match, one of my like current favorites, if you want to call it that, the I Quit match between Flair and Foley.
Oh, yeah. When was that?
I don't remember. Like, I watched it somewhat recently, but it had to be like, I want to say like 2007, maybe. I'm probably completely wrong, but
let me see. Let's look up 2007. Right. Let's look it up. I just opened it up on the computer here. No, it's not 2007.
But 2008?
Maybe. Let me see here. Was Flair wrestling in 2008? Let's see.
It was like a year or two before his retirement. Well, while you're looking for it, like, I just remember, like, it was just so bloody, gruesome with the thumbtacks. Like, this was kind of like, you know, at that time I felt WWE, you know, played it too safe with some of these hardcore matches. You know, if there was a dude like...
That was 2006, dude.
2006, okay, yep. I was a year off.
Yep.
But, you know, I felt sometimes they were playing it safe. It wasn't until, I think, Orton had a match with Foley that he actually landed on the thumbtacks, where I was kind of, like, slightly impressed, because usually it was, like, Foley always taking the bumps, and it's like, it was too predictable. I wanted to see some of these pretty boy guys, even Flair, you know, take it hard onto the thumbtacks or, you know, the barbed wire bat, and, you know, that particular match, Flair and Foley, was just insane, especially when Flair was about ready to drop the barbed wire bat on Melina. Like, oh my God, that was great.
Yeah, and for me anyway, I thought that SummerSlam was always like the, you know, it always, they tried to always compete with the older ones anyway, with WCW, NWA, I should say.
Yeah.
The Great American Bash, which was over the top, fantastic. But speaking of the NWA and WCW, that's going to bring up the current episode. Episode number 34, by the way, if you're keeping score.
Lucky number 34.
Is it lucky? It was my football number in high school. But
there you go. It's lucky.
Yeah, before I got really fat, became a linebacker. But episode 34 is the WCW Beach Blast 1992. So I'm gonna give the fans a quick background of how this came to pass. You had mentioned this is one of your favorite cards, top to bottom.
Oh yeah,
of all time. You found it. You had the videotape.
Yeah.
You said to me, "Can I convert it?" And I said yes. So you showed up at my job last week, looking fresh to death. Shirt and tie, like you were a fucking escort. And you handed me this big duffel bag. You said, do what you can. And this was the first thing I copied. And I Great copy, by the way. Cause not only was it the original copy, but you kept it in really good shape. And even my wife was like, "Wow, this is good copy for what? This is Mega Powers." I'm like, "Yeah, kept it in good shape."
Oh, I do my best to keep everything in mint condition. So,
and you know what? It was worth it because not only did it record, but we uploaded it and we got it out. And I watched it twice already.
Ha.
And, you know, the problem with some of these home videos is they don't play everything. And I know you wanted the Ron Simmons promo.
Yeah, it was the Turner home video bullshit, you know, thing that they, you know, trying to keep it to 2 hours, cutting stuff from matches.
Right.
It's a bunch of bullshit, and I won't let it slide anymore.
Right.
Turner home video, you hear me.
And
it's not happening ever again.
And if you listen to the Midnight Jury's last podcast, Mike and Adam were having the same problem where they were doing the Bash at the Beach 94, which was Hogan's WCW debut, pay-per-view debut anyway.
Which I want to do for hopefully the next episode, because that was actually my very first pay-per-view period that I was able to watch in my own home. And it's pretty historical, and I want to kind of play off of some of what they were talking about in that episode.
It was one of the worst pay-per-views ever, but that's just my opinion.
What are you talking about? It was great.
No, it wasn't. It was terrible. And you know what? And before we get into this, I want to I want to just add, if you want to talk about it in a couple of seconds, we can. I don't care. I mean, we don't have a time limit. You know, it's our show.
Yeah.
But you know, this got a real heated debate after me and Eddie from Shining Wizard started getting in on a conversation with Mike and you and all and Dan and Lopez and everybody. It turns out that, you know, this whole build-up with Hogan and Flair was 3 years prior, dude. I was at the Garden in 91 or 92 when Flair first came in. It was 91, I believe it was.
Yeah.
When he was the real world's champion. And you had 18,000 people in Madison Square Garden just flipping the shit because they were finally going to see Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair get it on.
Yeah.
You know? Again, and this was to coincide with Hogan's 60th birthday a few days later and all that. And again, I was never a Hulkamaniac. A lot of you guys were.
I still am, even though I hate the man.
I know. And you know what? I respect his contribution because if it wasn't for him, I think the landscape of sports entertainment would have been totally not where we are now currently in the state of the game, you know?
Some people can say that they would want it a different way, too.
No, absolutely, absolutely. So whether, you know, whether you like them or not, again, respect the contribution. And, you know, by the time Hogan had gotten to WCW, he was in a good place in a good time. And he had, like, that one more good run. And I say one more good run as a face because we all know what happens not even 2 years. Well, actually 2 years exactly after that.
Yeah.
Trent, you know, he reinvented himself. And I compare that to what's going on with John Cena now where people are like, oh, you got to turn Cena heel, make him the corporate guy. He's got to go bad. Listen. In 1994, Hogan wasn't making the rounds to the children's hospitals like he used to. Hogan wasn't the Make-A-Wish Foundation guy anymore like he was in 86, you know? Hogan wasn't the big name like John Cena is now. Hogan was a name. He was the name. But I don't think he was significant in his company like John Cena is now, you know?
No, I totally agree with you. Especially in 94... things had drastically changed, you know, as far as Hulk Hogan, you know, the landscape of wrestling. This was like a real slump in wrestling at that point.
Right, and to get back to Mike and Adam, they were having the same problem with the video because Mike had the full copy from his collection where Adam saw the edited Turner home video version of the thing. So
the scam, you know, copy.
Right. You miss all the backstage shit, the promo shit, because again, like you said, they're trying to make that 2 hour mark. So,
yeah.
But nonetheless, this card was particularly good. They actually showed it on WWE Classics last year because of the whole Sting and Mick Foley thing. We'll get into that in a couple of minutes. I'm pissed because I always like to see the dark matches. You know,
me too.
I like to see the dark matches.
You know, it's the whole feel. You want to see the countdown show. You want to get pumped for the event, even though it's like 92. That's over 20 years old.
Right.
Wow, it's over 20 years old. Shit.
Right. It is over 20 years old. Your dark. Well, actually, it's June 20th, 1992, from the Mobile Civic Center in beautiful Mobile, Alabama. I don't know if it's beautiful. I'm assuming it is.
Okay. It's Mobile, Alabama. It can't be.
It can't be. Okay, well.
They only had a measly attendance of 5,000
people. Yeah, that's weird. For that time, I guess it's because it's a small venue. I don't know.
Maybe because it was WCW.
True. But WCW,
I was doing a little research, you know, after the whole Greg Klein episode. I was watching some Mid-South.
Yeah.
And I forgot what I was watching, but there was something where they were talking about, you know, how there was a WCW event, you know, at the Superdome, and I think it was like Jim Ross and Michael P.S. Hayes, you know, doing commentary for an event, and P.S. Hayes, you know, he just kind of threw it out there, you know, just like an inside joke amongst people involved. He was like, you know, I once held the attendance record, you know, at the Superdome, and I think tonight's event is going to give me a run for my money. And it was like probably like the same amount of people, like 5,000 people or some shit like that. So, yeah, even though WCW is number two, you know, really, you know, like a superstar's 8-hour taping probably had a bigger, you know, turnout than this event. You know, granted, this is Beach Blast 92. This is an off the charts, you know, event. I even enjoyed the shit matches, the shit filler matches during this. It was that good, and they can only draw 5,000 people, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, a lot of guys can say, "Well, I was a WCW guy. I was a NWA guy. I was a WWE. You know, I was a wrestling guy."
Yeah.
I watched whatever the hell was on television. I couldn't get enough of it. So, you know, so I'm glad that Mike and Adam had the same problems that we do in terms of video footage.
Well, it's not the same problems. One guy had the full event. We don't have the full event.
We don't have the full event.
But you know what? We're going to go off of memories.
Well, you know what? We could still work on it. Some schmuck in Middle America has it. I will get my hands on it.
Yeah, we'll have Beach Blast 92 Part 2. The revenge.
Right. We could do like a we can revisit it. We could do like a year anniversary show of the episode 34.
Sand in your face, motherfucker.
Jim Ross and Jesse the Body Ventura are
the Body. My favorite wrestling commentator of all time.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I don't dislike Jesse. I love Jesse. I actually was watching something with him the other day, and he was he intruded on a Superstar Billy Graham commentary with Gorilla Monsoon. I think it was on one of your videotapes that I was converting.
Mm.
And he was like, you know, again, if it wasn't for Billy Graham, you wouldn't have characters like Hulk Hogan and
you wouldn't have Jesse Ventura.
Jesse Ventura, you know. So yeah, Jesse was very, very, very colorful. I loved the Body Shop. I loved his arm wrestling feud with Ivan Putski. Maybe we'll get into that in a couple of shows. That'd be cool.
Ivan Paduski.
Yeah, Paduski, yeah. Chico Santana. Yeah, all right. So, I mean, Jesse was good. Jesse was good, period, you know? And
but I got to ask you, how did you feel about his WCW run as a commentator?
He didn't really do anything different in WCW. He was still that guy, you know. Jesse didn't have to change, you know, sort of like with Jim Ross. If you know, Jim Ross didn't change at all until he became more part of the company when he was in WWE. Mm-hmm. When he became like a talent relations guy and all that shit. But Jim, a lot of guys made that transition and they really didn't skip a beat. Like Tony Schiavone kind of skipped a beat when he came over here in the early 90s.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I like Jesse. I didn't have a problem with him on commentary at all.
You know, I gotta disagree. As much as I love Ventura, I think when he went to WCW, he lost a little bit of his fire. And that happened with a lot of guys. It happened with Heenan, too, you know. You know, there's some shining moments the Body had during this event, but could really tell that it wasn't the same. You know, he was still doing some of the same old gags, but it wasn't the same as you would see on a Saturday night's main event or a WrestleMania. You know, plus talent like Jim Ross and a lot of people there, and they were a lot different than your Vince McMahon or your Gorilla Monsoon. So,
what do you think was because of the talent or because of the time?
I think of every little thing you got to take into consideration. You know, he's in WCW, and even back then, people were having troubles with the higher ups, whether it was the Jim Herd or Bill Watts. You know, all those guys. With WCW, they always had kind of a mismatch of the higher ups, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was an issue. And another thing I was thinking about, I felt it kind of strange that Jesse the Body bowed out when Hogan came in, and they had their own little inside feud with one another too.
Yeah, I think Jesse holds a lot of remorse for the way the politics changed the game. They both came from the same area in the AWA and stuff like that. And Jesse was like the big guy there.
Yeah.
Right when Hogan was brought in, So I think, and they both went similar paths. I think Jesse had better, more high profile movies than Hogan did at one point.
Absolutely. Predator.
Yeah. I just think it was just about a look.
And also, another thing that's just kind of popping into my head right now, the Body was always very progressive about, how wrestling should be handled. You know, he always felt that there should have been some sort of unions to help out the talent involved, because these guys are, going at it 200 to 300 days out of the year. And, they have no health insurance, they really get the company is only backing them up to a certain extent. It's pretty much their meat out there for our enjoyments, just pounding the shit out of each other. But once it's all said and done, I'm pretty sure as well as I do, a lot of those guys from the past, like, they're still kind of bumming around because they don't really have the company didn't help them out as much, for their future. And, I noticed Ventura was always somebody who would, back up the boys, not just for business, but for their personal lives too.
Right. And they don't like what the NFL does. They have like that, they have that retirement union. Like they have, like, they take care of the old guys and they get them like health insurance, shit like that,
Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of reform eventually. I mean, there's been, they have like these conventions and stuff like that, and I don't know.
Yeah, they got the I forgot what, I don't know, for some reason the term is leaving me right now. But what our pal PJ Polacco, went through the whole drug rehab. That's what I'm looking for, rehab.
Yeah, they
you
do.
Know,
that for
they
them.
Have that for these guys, but I. Granted, I'm not on the inside. I don't know what else they offer these guys, but it doesn't seem like it's too much more than that,
Yeah. All right, they should be doing more, and I think down the line, you'll see that. I personally feel that there's going to be some kind of reform. I think there's a couple of wrestlers. I mean, there's so many resources now, and the WWE pretty much monopolized the industry. There's not really any competition. It's just them and the indies. I mean, if you want to count TNA,
Yeah.
That's sad. And I think there'll be some kind of reform, I think, anyway, eventually.
It's happening, but, slowly but surely, things are coming together. We're at least at a point now where pretty much like, nobody's... who don't really have much of a wrestling background or, are able to get these kind of jobs and, have some sort of living. From what I remember with Zack Ryder, they weren't paying him too much, but, still you would be able to have an extraordinary life that other people wouldn't.
Yeah, someone just released a on the internet. I forget where it was, but it was one of the dirt sheet sites. Someone released, like, the pay scale of some of the top guys, you know? And there's only, like, two or three guys on it that are making over $1 million a year. Like, the rest of the guys are making, like, either a half or a little low. I know, like, Alberto Del Rio is making, like, 600 grand, and he gets to fly. Like, they give you, like, it's like a package. You get, like, the big contract, and you fly coach. you know, and that's how they break it down. You fly coach, you fly first class, and you know. But then, again, we're I don't want to steer away from the car, but
yeah,
there should be some kind of reform, and I think that with this day and age, someone's going to take some action, and hopefully it'll be Triple H once he takes the company over. You know, so we'll see what happens.
Well, let's hope it. You know, he takes something other than the main event spot away from people. So.
Put that shovel away and stop burying people.
Yeah.
Fucking take care of people, man. All right. 92, Beach Blast, Alabama, 5,000 people. That's all you're getting in this arena. Your dark match was the JYD, the Z-Man, and, of course, rest in peace, Big Josh, Matt Bourne, defeating Tracy Smothers, Richard Morton, and a newcomer, Diamond Dallas Page.
Never heard of the guy.
Right. Exactly. There's no time on this. I remember seeing the match.
Wait, was this for the 6-man tag team championship?
No, this wasn't. I remember Richard Morton. They had just had that whole York Foundation thing.
Yes.
You remember that. Okay. So these guys all just like put together the curtain jerk because they didn't have anything else for them to do. You know?
Having a computer tell them what to do.
That's right. She was so hot, dude.
She didn't have the fake breasts back then, so I didn't really take too much notice of her.
I liked her with that power suit on, with the blazer and the glasses and the mini skirt and the fuck me pumps. I liked all that. That was good stuff.
And her Coleco computer.
Yes.
Helping out, Terry Taylor and all those other schmucks.
That's right. That's right. The 4,000-pound IBM Mac book they had to use. Because, you know, those laptops were like 16 pounds back then.
Yeah.
You know?
The dot matrix printer probably underneath the ring.
Working DOS, you know? All right. Your next match was a fantastic opening match to the tape. Scotty Flamingo, a.k.a. Scott Levy, you know him better as Raven, defeating Brian Pillman to win the WCW Light Heavyweight Championship.
And I'm surprised you haven't brought it up. There was interesting rules back then that Bill Watts, the senior vice president of WCW at the time.
Well, I was going to, but go ahead. You opened it up. Go ahead. I have it written down here.
Well, you may or you may not know. That, at the time, WCW, one of their famous rules was no throwing people. You couldn't throw people over the top rope. That would be a disqualification.
That's right.
That was stemmed from the NWA, but Bill Watts just had to take it a little bit further. And he took the whole top rope away from everyone, meaning even if you jumped off the top rope, you were DQ'd. You were done. And for a light heavyweight championship match with, granted, Scotty Flamingo, Johnny Polo, whatever you want to call him, he wasn't much of a high flyer, but Brian Pillman was.
Yes.
And basically what you get here, which, you know, to what you just said, was still a fantastic match.
It was
more mat-based wrestling.
It was, and I thought, again, Scotty looked fantastic. You know, everybody forgets how good Raven looked because he always wore these goofy outfits. You know, he was Johnny Polo, he was Scotty Flamingo, and he was Raven. So he had a really good physique. He was a really good worker, and I think people forget that. But this match reminded me of how good of a worker he was. And between Bill Watts doing that with the top rope thing. Jim Ross mentioning that it was WCW's trademark not to have the mats around the ring.
Yes. which was supposed to make things even tougher for
right,
the boys.
As Pillman's getting tossed to the cement every 3 minutes in a match, you know.
Granted, you know, like a tiny little gym mat isn't that much help, but, you know, every little bit helps.
It's always fun to see the smaller guys take the bumps like that outside the ring, you know?
Yeah.
I thought so anyway.
And he had some good, you know, decent second rope action, you know, onto the floor for the match. So you know, you still got some, you know, some high-flying action out of these guys, even though there wasn't, the top rope wasn't too much in effect.
Right, right. Let me ask you something. As I'm watching this last night again, I'm looking at Brian Pillman, and you know the story with Brian Pillman. Shortly after this, he gets into that really bad accident and pretty much wrecks his, I think it was his leg or his ankle or something like that. I forget what, he injured something in the lower region of his body.
Yeah.
And of course he reinvents himself in ECW and WCW and then WWE with the whole, with Austin and all that and the Hart Foundation. Do you think Pillman still would have been that guy if he didn't get hurt? Or would he still be that high flyer wearing the leopard pants? You know what I'm saying? Not the leopard pants. The, what kind of pants do you have? The bangle pants.
Yeah, he had the friggin'...
Eddie Bangle colors.
Yeah, the bangle pants.
Right.
Which always bothered me as a kid. When I was younger, I really didn't want to watch too many Brian Pillman matches because of that. But,
Dave's anti-bangle.
Yeah,
I'll just, we'll just
amongst other things.
If we have any fans in the Cincinnati region, I apologize.
It's not that, but it's just a man wearing these like Speedos in the ring, and they're just too small.
Oh, I don't. That's another podcast, man.
Yeah,
ring attire. We should do a throwback ring attire fucking podcast.
We should do that.
That'd be insane.
Well, you had Scotty Flamingo with like the craziest leather jacket, where like these, you know, shit. It would give fucking Corey Feldman's like punk jacket from the 80s a run for his money.
Well, that's probably where he got it from. He's probably in one of those clubs in LA doing coke in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Probably lent them a jacket. Hey, I got this from the outsider set. You want it? Yeah, go ahead. That's fine.
There you go. It's got pink and holes in it and sparkly things.
Well, the match must have been good luck for him because he wins the match at 17 minutes and 29 seconds. This was a fantastic opening card.
Yeah, a lot of like chain wrestling, a lot of just, you know, I'll give Bill Watts some credit, you know. The fact that the top rope was not allowed, you know, made it like an interesting dynamic for a lot of these guys who could, you know, show off, you know, outside of just doing, you know, aerial maneuvers. So, you know, to Bill Watts' credit, you know, Brian Pillman, Scotty Flamingo totally rose to the occasion on this one.
Yeah. A couple of matches you didn't see on the tape, which the next one is, you'd be very pissed because you made a mention of the promo that Ron Simmons cut, which was... I remember the promo. The promo was fantastic, and I didn't remember it until you brought it up. It was on, I believe, WCW Saturday Night, correct? Or was it on the Sunday show? I forget which one it was on.
No, the promo was part of the...
Was it part of the pay-per-view?
Yeah.
I thought it was part... I knew he cut something, though, on one of the weekend shows that was leading up to this match. He fought Terry Taylor. And, I mean, Terry Taylor, I can't believe Terry Taylor was like almost 60
years old. The Taylor-made man,
that's right, the York Foundation.
And, of course, Taylor is spelled wrong.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, it's a play on words, Dave. We want to tell you.
Yeah. WCW disappoints grammatically, too, so.
Grammatically.
You know, if you weren't disappointed enough by WCW during any part of its time, even grammar, they tend to disappoint too. So,
yeah.
But I love WCW.
Of course, yeah. As
even
he follows that up with, I love WCW.
You know, I can look past some of these things, but anyway.
God damn it, you better.
Ron Simmons beat the shit out of Terry Taylor during this match.
He gave him like a 7-minute beating. It was pretty funny.
and followed it up with an amazing inspirational promo from Jim Ross that, you know, I don't really remember it too well. I don't remember the things that he said, but it was basically, this was leading up to his world title win, which was coming down the road. And, you know, basically he put it out there, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can do anything.
That's right.
Just keep at it. That's which, right. You know, doesn't matter who says it, but, you know, it's particularly special when I hear Ron Simmons say it.
All right, so your next match is Greg the Hammer Valentine defeating Marcus Alexander Bagwell.
Wow, two subpar wrestlers battling it out.
Yeah, another 7-minute snooze fest. Love 1984 Greg Valentine. Not a big fan of 1992 Greg Valentine.
Yeah, they were two different men. But you know what? I enjoyed this match regardless.
Right. Now, the next segment was actually bumped up to the second feature on the video.
Yep.
Missy Hyatt defeating Medusa with Paulie, of course, in a bikini contest that Johnny B. Bad was the MC, and of course Jesse Ventura was not picked as the MC. He was very pissed off about that.
Yeah, I don't know why Jesse the Body Ventura wasn't initially a part of this.
Right, well, that's exactly what he said, verbatim, actually. there were three segments, three different kinds of clothes. Nobody cares. I hated it then. I hated watching it again.
Hey,
now.
You know, I enjoyed it.
I'm not a fan of Mark Merrow. I'm not. And I'm not.
I thought it was interesting that Jesse the Body called him out on whether he was gay or straight on television, which was one of the things that I loved about Ventura that he kept when he was still in WCW. He would call people out.
Yeah.
And he said, do you like women? And of course he dodged the answer. So we may never know.
But he did. Yeah, he got Sable a couple of years later. So we know where.
Well, we don't know that for sure. We only know what the TV tells us, Phil. We don't know what's going on afterwards.
Jesus Christ.
Could have paid her off, you know. Lord knows what. These are wrestlers, Phil. There's a whole weird subculture that we don't know about that's going on outside of the ring.
This is true.
I've heard some stories, Phil.
This is true. All right, well.
But you know what? What a way to start off the bikini competition with, the evening gown portion of the bikini contest.
Right. Evening gown, and then Medusa comes out in a wedding dress, which is kind of fucking creepy, but...
Yeah. And, of course, Johnny B. Badd is selling it like she's baddest woman on the planet, according to him.
Yeah, she was ravishing. She's ravishing. I'm like, shut up. Kill yourself. Stupid. Anyway. I hate Johnny B. Badd. I'm sorry.
What about when he came back to TNA? Did you hate him then?
I did. Wow. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. He
had one, Bad the
match,
Blaster?
The match he had with Austin at King of the Ring was good. That when he busted Austin's lip. I thought that match was pretty entertaining. He had some good matches. I'm just not a fan at all. Not a fan. But the next match was probably one of my favorite matches of all time. And this was, again, profiled on a couple of DVDs that I have, and it was on Classics on Demand, and that was, at the time, World Heavyweight Champion Sting fighting Cactus Jack.
In the first of two non-title matches.
First of two non... False Count Anywhere match.
Yes.
Can I tell you this is probably the longest 11 minutes of my life?
Why do you say that?
Because every time I want... What's the word I want to use here? I don't want to sound like I'm silly, but not in a facetious way.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a long... It was like... I think in terms of the structure of the match and how it went.
Yeah.
Like, there was such nonstop action. Like, everything stands still. Like, I watched it again today from work, right? And it was, like, the longest 15 minutes of my life. Because I'm a dispatcher, I have to stop and answer calls and attempt to save a life. So, like, I have to stop. And when I stop the video on the computer, I'm like, man, it was just like... You go back to it, you're like, this is, like... it's such a good match, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm glad, you know, you took some time out to save a life.
Oh, yeah, I did, actually, today.
While watching this match.
I did. No bullshit. Chick called and emotionally disturbed, and she didn't sound right, and I had to call the police to a home, and as I re-paused the video, I'm like, man, I'm going to go back to this long-ass video, and it's going to be the longest 11 minutes and 24 seconds of my life.
Wow.
And it was Sting and Cactus Jack. I like old Sting.
You know, you should have shown this match to the woman. Maybe that would have strained her out.
No. She needed professional help, Dave.
Okay, so then show her the Ricky Steamboat match.
Yeah. That's the next match, man.
Okay, Falls Count Anywhere. Anywhere on the Gulf Coast.
Falls Count Anywhere on the Gulf Coast. And it would have been cool if they wound up in Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
But I enjoyed Old Sting.
I was a big fan of Old Sting, too, you know. Even though, you know, for a lot of people it was really cheesy, you know, I felt he really, you know, rose to the occasion. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of his, like, really, like, early stuff, like when he was thrown together with Jim Hellwig. But these guys used to, like, their matches were literally body slam, shove. That's it.
Oh, when they were the Blade Runners, yeah.
No, they were the Freedom Fighters.
The Freedom Fighters, I'm sorry. Yeah. Before they were the Blade Runners.
Yeah, so this was like, if you ever seen any of that kind of stuff and you watch this match, Sting has come a long way.
Again, I loved Sting in his WCW and NWA days. I thought right time, right place. I thought perfect. Again, if it wasn't for Magnum TA getting hurt, it opened up opportunities for guys like Sting and Lex Luger to come in and make a name for themselves, and who weren't that talented. They had to work at it, and I think Sting earned his spot. And we'll get into fantasy warfare with Sting after the card. It's a good it's a good segue, because we had one of our fans put up a question on the Facebook page, and we'll address that in a couple of minutes.
He didn't email us, Phil?
No, he didn't email us. Ah. Nobody wants my prizes, man. We're gonna have to come up, and I appreciate your hustle on the Facebook page. We'll work at it.
I don't know what's wrong with some of these people that are our listeners.
I have autographed figurines. I have DVDs. I'm sure you have some swag you want to give away.
Oh yeah.
I don't get these people, but you know what? Well, it's a work in progress. We're still small fish in a big network pond.
I feel like I got to break into some of the people's homes and leave some of the stuff there. And even then, I think they would, you know, call the police and have it returned somehow.
That's hysterical.
But back to Sting and
Cactus
Jack.
Back to Sting and Cactus Jack. Again, a lot of back and forth action. Crazy bumps. I feel this match solidified Mick Foley after his big trip in the IWA to Japan. I think this solidified Mick Foley as one of those guys that can do that, and his peers are in. Not only are they in awe about it, but Mick Foley talked about this match in length in a couple of his books and a couple of his interviews on how Sting was so taken by the fact that he could take all these bumps, that Sting was like in awe of him almost, you know? And it was cool. We didn't know he was going to be this hardcore icon. He would go to Japan, win King of the Death matches, and go to ECW and, you know, Mankind and all this other shit. He was just Cactus Jack, you know? And he was Cactus Jack for a while. He was Cactus Jack in World Class. He was Cactus Jack in Smoky Mountain. He was Cactus Jack in WCW.
Yeah.
You know, he was Jack Foley on WWF programming as a jobber, you know.
And Dynamite Kid, you know, hospitalized him, so.
That's right. Broke his jaw, I think, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this solidified Mick Foley's status in the business, I think. I feel, anyway.
Yeah.
Would you feel the same way, or?
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, I think on the Greatest Hits and Misses DVD, you know, he references his, like, possibly his favorite match of all time, and I can really see why, because damn, the dude just kind of like let loose on his body. Like there are so many. There's like a belly to back on the concrete. There's a suplex to the back. He did a friggin' sunset flip.
Yes.
Off the apron onto the floor.
Yep.
A sunset flip to the floor. And it only got a two count.
Right, I know. And Sting actually wins the match. He pins Cactus with a flying clothesline from the top turnbuckle.
Legal during this match.
Yep, onto the entrance ramp.
Yeah.
Where the match actually started.
So. And it's just a true testament that, how the heels, are really the stars during these kind of matches. Because, my God, like, the amount of punishment that this man put himself through, with the idea that, probably nothing's going to come out of his career, or maybe he'll get a little push, after this. But, he really put everything out on the line to have this, like, pretty, in my opinion, like a flawless match for 5,000 people. And what rating did they get on this? They only got a 0.40 buy rate for the pay-per-view. So these people got more than their money's worth.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also think that it's, I didn't think the guys cared at that point, how many people there were in the audience, a lot of guys that loved their craft, you could tell Mick Foley loved what he did. And even as a young kid, you knew, like, the guys that loved it or the guys that were friends with each other that were in the ring always entertained you and put on a good match.
Yeah.
And if you were a smarter wrestling fan, you could tell that again, I've enjoyed Mick Foley in almost anything he's done, only because I know he genuinely loved what he did, And there's not a lot of guys in wrestling that can say that,
No, especially nowadays, There's a lot of guys that really, a lot of people complain about, for Raw, for instance, they complain about Raw, like the matches are too short, they're boring, all this kind of stuff, and it's like, well, the guys in the ring, don't really have an excuse. If they're given 5 minutes, they better give a hell of a 5 minutes if they're going to stand out. Not just to keep their job, but just to be better at what they do.
Right.
So, I don't really feel all the blame should come on, Vince and, whoever else is, these soap opera writers that are writing the show. It comes down to the talent in the ring. If you're not passionate about it, then maybe this isn't for you. But, if you're given 3 minutes or 5 minutes for a match, go out there and make a fucking phenomenal performance, something to have everybody write home about.
That's right. And what these ingrates don't realize is that these guys go in there 5 minutes at a time, but they're doing it 300 times a year.
Yeah.
In every little town. They're not just doing it on Raw. They're not just doing it on SmackDown. They're doing it 3-4 times a week for, 97% of the year.
Yeah.
So, brush up on your history and stay away from the keyboard, these internet wrestling community warriors, fucking pansies.
Yeah, and, I'm sure some of these dudes probably won't be able to hang in the ring either.
No.
Or even a training session, so.
There are two guys that could definitely hang in this next match.
And oh, yeah.
That was the United States Heavyweight Championship. That was not on the line. Should have been.
Not on the line.
It should have been. Another non-title match, like you mentioned before. I'm pretty pissed off about that, but the match was fantastic. It was a 30-minute Iron Man match.
This was a match so Ricky Steamboat could get a title shot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Rick Rude was the current champion, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And this was a 30-minute match, and the first two falls were, convincing.
Yeah, it was really great storytelling, and, I was kind of surprised because, Jesse the Body mentioned, Steamboat had his child lingering around in the ring, So Rude, you know, couldn't take care of business, but, you know, Rude overcame that.
Right.
And he bested the great Ricky Steamboat two falls straight.
Like, he, like, it was at the first pinfall was at 7:42, right?
Yep.
And then at that point, you know, the momentum carries, and not even, like, it was like a minute and change later, like 8:39, less than a minute later,
gets the second fall.
He gets the second fall.
And it was phenomenal because, you know, the match starts off with Steamboat in the lead. You know, he tosses Rude up in the air.
Yeah, like the first 5 minutes of the match, Steamboat is, like, dominating the match.
Yeah, bruised, you know, Rick Rude's ribs. Rude was in agony.
Yep.
You know, Rude was lucky enough to pull up the knee when Steamboat was charging at him, and, you know, Steamboat being as bright as he is, he ran headfirst into his knee, took the first fall.
Listen, 30 minutes is 30 minutes, but to a wrestler, 30 minutes is a lifetime. And so now, Rude loses a little bit of steam now. A minute later, a minute and a second later, he gets disqualified.
But with a good purpose.
Yes. Yes.
Which leads to the third fall, as he smartly went to the top rope and dropped a knee on Steamboat, you know, further injuring him. And then once he gets disqualified, casually small packages him for the third fall.
Yep, at 10 minutes and 11 seconds. And then, now you're, you know, now it's the midway point. And you could tell Rude is starting to lose a little bit of momentum, keeping himself in the match, and the first pinfall Steamboat actually gets is almost 20 minutes in now at this point.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't think Rude, you know, as you say, telling a story, I don't think Rude actually recovered the way he should have, which made Steamboat get the next two falls.
Well, yeah, because, after those three pinfalls that Rude got, you know, he was pretty much dominating for the most part.
Right.
And there's like a brief, very brief, you know, Steamboat comeback. But then Rude was right back at it. So, you know, from there, you know, Rude was pretty much dominating this match. And, you know, like you said, 30 minutes is an eternity for some of these guys. And when it came down towards the last 10 minutes, Steamboat got his second wind, and he came back as he reversed the Tombstone Piledriver for the first pinfall.
Yep. So that he gets the first pinfall at 17:39, pins Rude again at 20:22, and finally at 29 minutes and 25 seconds, 5 seconds before the bell.
And Rude was scrambling.
Yeah,
for those last 30 seconds or so,
he was trying to get like an edge in, and it just at that point it was, you know,
there must have been like 15 pinfalls that he
attempted.
Yeah,
it was like Savage Steamboat all over again, actually, almost.
Yeah,
you know, so again, Rude's belt was not on the line. Steamboat does win, and this actually Steamboat stays with the company for a little while longer. Actually becomes U.S. champ, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe Steve Austin gets in that picture in the next year or two.
Yeah, and they battled for the TV and the U.S. belts.
Yeah.
But we all know the real winner was Rick Rude.
Rick Rude is always a winner. Taking nothing away from Ricky Steamboat, Rick Rude, again, one of my all-time favorite wrestlers of all time. And
he got to win the I think when he first won it, it was still the NWA World Championship, but then they switched it to the WCW International.
Well, that's a fan. You know, I'm so glad that I took notes, and I'm so glad that you just said that, because that was my next segue. I was going to ask you the same question I asked you previously about Brian Pillman, about Rick Rude. You know, we all know the big thing with Rick Rude getting hurt in Japan. Sting apparently injured his back. Whatever the case may be, you heard different stories.
Yeah.
My question to you again: if Rude didn't get hurt, do you think you'd be a world champion, A, and be a main player in either WCW or WWF at the time?
Yeah, he totally would have been, in my opinion, because first of all, he was already at, you know, world title level.
Right.
It was just his luck, you know, at that moment, that they fucking changed the name of the belt after he wins it to something ridiculous as international world champion. So what does that make the world championship? Isn't international world enough? Isn't that global enough? Apparently not in the eyes of WCW, but the man, in my opinion, he was able to adapt and change because obviously he was in WWF and, you know, really, I don't think he would have, if he continued being with WWF, I don't think he would have risen too much further than, you know, just being another guy losing to Hogan. So him switching to WCW, you know, obviously he was one of the, if not the top heel, you know, for the company for a bit. And, you know, even though he wasn't actively involved in, you know, ECW, WWE, or, I mean, WWF, rather, or WCW, you know, when he returned, the guy was a major player wherever he went. And, you know, I felt, you know, I still feel, you know, if he was able to wrestle, he would have been at the top.
I agree. I totally agree.
Because his interviewing skills, you know, despite the fact, you know, he was still doing the robes and the mustache, people didn't care, you know, they kept running with it. And he was always somebody that got on everybody's nerves. So yeah, he would have totally been at the top.
I agree. They could have made him world champion a couple of times over. You know, it would have been fantastic. But again, yeah, it didn't come to pass.
Fate's cruel hand wasn't on his side for this.
Absolutely. All right, so your next match was a 6-man tag team match. The Natural Dustin Rhodes teaming up with Barry Windham and older Nikita Koloff.
Yes.
Taking on the dangerous alliance of Arn Anderson, Steve Austin, stunning Steve Austin, and beautiful Bobby Eaton. With Paul E., Dangerously, and Medusa. Oh, by the way, special guest referee, Ole Anderson.
Yeah.
Nothing really significant in this match. Nothing really stands out to me. To you, or no?
And, well, nothing could stand out because the Turner Home Video version cut out like 5 minutes of the match, so...
Yeah. The face team of Windham, Rhodes, and Koloff do get the win at 15:32. You don't see almost 7 minutes of this match because Ted Turner's got to, you know, put Andy Griffin on it at 6:05 afterwards, you know?
Yeah, exactly. but you do get to see the top rope rule put into effect as
yes,
Arn Anderson.
Yes, you do, by disqualification. So Ole Anderson, old school guy himself, follows the rules for the first time in his 57-year career.
Probably the last time
because he's a bitter old man. He's a fucking douche. We'll get into that in another podcast. But Ole does disqualify the
his own
team.
Flesh and blood.
That's right. The Anderson twins. They're not even from Minnesota.
And they're not even related.
It's
but you know what? They're related
by the symbol of excellence.
There you go.
The Four Horsemen. That's right. Your final match of the evening could be a runner-up to the Sting and Cactus Jack match because anytime I get to see the Miracle Violence Connection fight, it's always a good time. I'm speaking, of course, of Doc and Gordy. Doc and Gordy, as Perry Saturn so eloquently put it. Dr. Det Steve Williams, Terry Bam Bam Gordy are now main players in the Land of the Rising Sun. They come to WCW to take on the WCW World Tag Team Champions, Rick and Scott Steiner.
Some other veterans of the Orient, former IWGP champions, tag team champions.
That's right. So now at this point, Doc and Gordy are main players in Japan.
If you want to call it, you know, SummerSlam 91 had the match made in heaven, the match made in hell. You could say this match is the match made in Japan.
Yeah, this was these guys. Of course, WCW always had a good working agreement with New Japan.
Yes.
But the Steiners were always going to Japan, and they've had their bumps with the MVC. And I think it was a brilliant, genius booking move by WCW bringing these guys in to not only, you know, these are all non-title matches. You know,
but the belts were on the line for this one.
This was the only match. I was going to say that. It's the only
match. No, there's two. The World Light Heavyweight Championship.
World Light Heavyweight Championship. So they opened the match with a title match, and they closed it with a title match. This is genius booking. If this was Bill Watts, then again, kudos to him. You know, I don't know if it was, but if it was, then kudos. Because that was a good move, taking the only two title matches and making them, you know, opening and closing this really kick-ass card.
Bookends of the one of the greatest WCW pay-per-views of all time.
Yeah, and
this could have been an Iron Man match.
This could have been. You know what, though? I think these guys are too big for that. Big in size. I don't think Doc and Gordy can go 40 minutes with the Steiner Brothers. I'm sorry.
They can make it a
2 out of 3.
Well, they went 20 minutes, so that's a start.
They fought for a half an hour. They went to a draw.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not taking nothing away from these guys. I just think I think it was a different animal. And they just beat the snot out of each other. This was a fantastic match.
Yeah, but I found it very interesting. They didn't, you know, this wasn't totally Japanese style. This was a very old school, you know, American style match. Like, it started off slow. Like, there was, you know, you had, I think, did Gordy have a collegiate background? I know Doc and the Steiners did.
Doc and the Steiners, I don't know about Gordy. I know Gordy played high school, college. I think he played a little college. I'm not sure. Let me look that up
But yeah, you know, you had this, you know, a lot of college, you know, wrestling background from a lot of these guys, and they really were strutting their stuff with that in the beginning. Like, they played it slow. Like, you did not get a high impact maneuver until, like, a good, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 minutes into the match. And I think that was like a backdrop from Rick to Doc. And, like, once it hit, it was like, wow, now I get what they're doing. They're building it up slow, and they're building it up to a fevered pitch. So yeah, you know, it was an interesting, different kind of match than I was expecting. You know, at first it was just very slow, collegiate-style match. Then they get right down to it.
Yeah, he had no collegiate background. He actually started.
Yeah, that makes sense because I think he started as a pro wrestler when he was like 14. And he lied about his age.
He was 14 years old. Absolutely. Yeah. Again, one of my favorite matches. Two of my favorite matches of all time are actually on this card. That's rare, you know. And
really,
it's so cool that you brought this up to me because I had just saw these on Classics on Demand, you know, not too long ago. So, really good stuff. So there it is, Dave. That's Beach Blast 92.
And, you know, the funny thing about this, I was doing a little reading on this beforehand, and, you know, this event was actually thrown together. Like, they didn't have the full matches until, like, the month of. Like, this was not something that was... It was being built up, but it wasn't, like, official until maybe, like, the month of, or, you know, maybe about like a month and a half, 2 months going into this, which was kind of rare for back then because you kind of knew what was coming down the road because, you know, they would be hyping up the next event, you know, 4 or 5 months beforehand. So you knew what you were getting into. So, and Bill Watts was fresh in WCW at this point, and the rules had just changed, I think, within that month.
Let's hook him up. That was his big thing.
Yeah.
Let's hook him up. Again, if this was a Bill Watts thing, which I'm hoping it was, like, forget about, I'm breaking kayfabe, but, like, if this was Bill Watts legitimately doing all this and booking it like this, again, this is just to show his genius in terms of being a booker, you know. We talked about it in length with Greg Klein, the Mid-South stuff. I talked about it with you a few times already. And, It's a really good card. I'm glad we got to see it over.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people tend to bash Watts, but this was kind of, you know, especially at this time, he was definitely getting out of date. You know, to some degree, the Ron Simmons, you know, championship win was very. I don't even think it was ahead of its time because he already did it with Junkyard Dog. So
right,
but you know, I feel, you know, it didn't have the same impact, you know, as it could have. But you know, he was rehashing a lot of ideas. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. And you know, granted, Ron Simmons was still a great champion. Beating Vader, that's a big deal. But you know, just didn't turn out the way that he probably would have wanted it. But one thing that did turn out well was Beach Blast 92.
Yeah, it turned out really well. I'm glad we got to see it again. I'm glad that we actually own it now. I own it anyway. You've always owned it.
Yes. Reliving memories.
That's right. That's right. And that's gonna pretty much. Well, we got what's going to this fantasy warfare thing real quick. Our buddy.
We're not over.
No, we're not over.
This ain't over yet.
This ain't over yet, my friends. Our buddy Randy Taylor posted a picture on Facebook earlier this evening, and it's a poster of Sting and The Undertaker with the WrestleMania 30 logo for next year, and could this happen? And before I ask you if this can happen, this was a big question last year, only because they were hyping this person, it was coming, and it wasn't Sting, it was actually Undertaker coming back to wrestle again at WrestleMania, and they plugged, it looked like a Sting promo, and they had the crows, and the dark house, and all this other crap. And
people, it reeked of Sting.
Yeah, it reeked of Sting, and the dirt sheets, and all the IWC were like, oohing and ahhing, they were posting stuff on Twitter, and posting their conspiracy theories that Sting was going to jump ship. So now there's two questions. Sting is almost at the end of his run at TNA. He gets paid by appearance, which is about $10,000 from what I'm hearing. So he makes a substantial living.
Dear God, if I could only get paid $10,000 a show.
At 54 years old. And him and Taker are the same age about. It's no secret that it's not the same guys, you know. WWE owns all of Sting's good work, including this, what we just talked about. Anything Sting has done in NWA and WCW, they own. So, you know, he would have a place in their Hall of Fame, you know, only because they own WCW's history in their video library. So now my questions to you,
yes.
my tag team partner, is A, should the match happen if Sting is a free agent to put Undertaker into the pasture? Put them both into a pasture, actually. This would solidify, right? That's the first thing, A. And this is kind of going to answer your question from what you put on Facebook. Would it be a good match? And you said, no, it wouldn't. And,
you know, I'm thinking about it, and if they have enough time, which, you know, they definitely do, you know, it probably could be a good match. But let me state for the record, I was no big fan of any of the Shawn Michaels Undertaker matches at WrestleMania. I thought they were good, but I didn't think that they were legendary or, you know, worth praise that they were getting. You know, I felt it, you know, those matches were throwback matches, which was probably why it got the praise that it did. But you know, you can see throwback matches kind of anywhere. But you know, as far as Sting and Undertaker, you know, I feel that they can do a good match. I don't think it'll be a great match. It'll probably be worth seeing just for the sake of saying, "Hey, it finally happens," and it's 100% possible that this match can happen. You know, there's nothing getting in the way of them making this match happen. But do I think it will be a great match? No. But I think they could still pull it together where they could put themselves out, you know, the right way.
Think about it like this, Dave. What they can do is that now, if you look, think about it like this. If you open up their roster right now, WWE, and you look up and down the roster, there's not one guy on there that stands out that Undertaker can fight next year to go out in the pasture to make it to 30. Okay, there's not one guy on this roster, unless you put him with the unbeatable obstacle like a Brock Lesnar, which I don't see that happening either, or a rematch with CM Punk. I don't see that either. There's nobody on this roster right now, or 6 to 8 months down the line, that can make it interesting enough for me to go, oh my God, Undertaker's last match is against, oh great, him.
Yeah.
If you bring Sting in for one more match, you give him the brass ring, you put him in this program, you build him up right at the Rumble. Make him come to the Rumble. Make him come in the old Crow outfit with the bat and the whole nine yards.
Oh, yeah.
Make him come down from the rafters, put the bat to Undertaker and say, congratulations, I'm the only guy that you should have fought 10 years ago. I'm the only guy you should have beaten and you couldn't. I wouldn't even talk. I'd beat him with the bat and say congrats, and then point to the WrestleMania sign and say, and say that's what's going to happen to you.
And you know what? Something as simple as that would probably, you know, make so many highlight reels for years to come.
Right.
And, you know, one thing about Sting, why this would be, you know, truly something special for Sting, and you brought it up not too long ago, is, you know, WWE owns everything worthwhile that the man did, with the exception of his match with Flair on Impact, which was a great match. And I'm being absolutely facetious when I say that. It was a horrible match. And that match with Hogan, the street fight, was garbage. But you know what? If Sting were to do it right, have that match at WrestleMania against The Undertaker, and, you know, I'm not saying anything new, but, you know, I think for him personally, as a man, and, you know, he's made comments on this, you know, so many times. You know, a lot of people don't even recognize who he is after all the work that he's done in WCW. So many fans don't really, you know of the history of the man called Sting. And I feel for him to have that match at WrestleMania against The Undertaker, it wouldn't just be a WrestleMania moment, but for the man in his own personal life, would be the cherry on top. It would be the perfect moment, you know, for him to go out in his career and, you know, have the fans really know who Sting is. You know, there's a lot of internet wrestling community people out there talking trash about Sting, but, you know, just like Hogan, you know, Sting helped define WCW, and for his legacy to be not be fully addressed by wrestling fans in the WWE, I feel would be a grave misjudgment on everyone's part. So I feel it has to happen, and I hope it's this year, even though for so many years, you know, it hasn't gone down. We've been teased with it, but, you know, I pray to God, even though Sting ain't what he used to be, just for it to happen would be amazing.
I agree. And I would book it the way I said it. That's exactly how I would do it. And you could ride these guys off, and anybody from the age of 20 to now me being almost 40 would definitely appreciate that. And even the little guys who don't know any better that has seen stuff on video would definitely appreciate this, like, legendary status thing. It'll be like a once in a lifetime, no more bullshit. Let these guys go out with a, you know, Sting would do the job, obviously, but you would have that sense of, oh my God, this never happened before. I'm getting it. It's 30 years of WrestleMania. This can culminate into something really big. So if they were smart, they would throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at Sting to do this.
Yeah, and you know, with it being the 30th anniversary, that's a huge deal. And you know, it's kind of hard to call what you know, WWE would do, because you know they've definitely been open to dream matches for sure.
Yes.
You know, I never put down WWE in that sense. They know when it's right to put two guys together, but at the same time, you know, WWE could say, hey, well, we make enough money that we could probably pull in just the same amount of money if we brought in Bryan Danielson, or Daniel Bryan, rather, you know, for the match, you know, over Sting. But,
Sting.
Sting. But I feel for, you know, wrestling fans, old and new, to have this match would be
tremendous.
So satisfying. And yeah. It would give wrestling fans some closure in their lives.
Yeah.
To have this match happen.
You might have Mega Powers and Phil booking a trip to New Orleans for that, man.
Well, actually, I won a bet years ago where a friend of mine, if he quit smoking completely, he would not feel the wrath of the punishment, which is, you know, if he lit up a cigarette, then I would go to WrestleMania 30 on his dime, and he would also have to pay for me to go to the Hall of Fame. Wow. And I think we all know how that ended up. I'm going to WrestleMania.
Yeah, you know, my wife's even talking about going, and she's like a casual fan. So we may wind up in New Orleans regardless, so that could be a cool time.
Even if it's the worst WrestleMania ever, we're going to be there.
But Mega Powers and Phil will be broadcasting, so it would be from the network, so it would be fantastic.
Yes.
So, all right, that's going to do it for episode 34 of the Turnbuckle Throwback Wrestling Podcast. A couple of really quick plugs. I want to thank Rantham Radio, AA, and those guys for putting us on. I'm going to cut some bumpers for them for the
plug. Hey, wait a second. We didn't talk about the Darren Young being gay.
We will in a second. Yeah, I want to just thank them. I keep forgetting to thank them, guys. I want to thank them real quick. And before I get into the plugs and stuff, interesting article came out today. From, of course, everywhere. TMZ was the first to break it. Primetime player, tag team member, Darren Young. We refer to him as Black Cena.
Black Cena.
Is gay. And he's happy with it, and he came out, and of course, there's a bunch of people being really, really just insanely obnoxious, and, you know, with all the homophobe jokes, and all the sexuality jokes, but there were a lot of people, you and I included, and a lot of our network brethren, giving him kudos and props for doing that. You know, it's a commonplace now. Guys, a basketball player just did it, in female and male, WNBA and NBA guys.
Wow, well, the WNBA, that's not too much of a shock.
Yeah, but a lot of girls don't come out with it. Two girls just did, so it's a big deal now. I'm cool with it. I don't care. You know, it's like I said on Facebook. Titus O'Neil is going to get him in trouble before because he's sloppy. You know, but my question to you is,
yeah,
does he get a free ticket now? Does he get
free ticket to what?
Like, you think because he's black and gay? Do you think they'll future endeavor him anytime soon?
Well, to be quite honest, you know, in my opinion, the guy never really made too much of an impact. So I don't know. I'm sure he will, but I don't think it'll be because he's black and gay.
I really hope not. That's my point.
To be quite honest, I was kind of shocked that he was still part of the WWE when I heard that.
No, tag team wrestling is not what it was, but no, no. He's still around, man. He's not terrible. He's not great either, you know.
But I saw the video today, and he didn't even seem to care himself. So, you know, I don't really care. And frankly, you know, gay wrestlers, that's been a gimmick, you know, for ages. You know, even going down to Gorgeous George.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether the guy's gay on stage, or, you know, the guy.
Yeah, Gorgeous George, Adrian Adonis, Adrian Street.
Yeah.
Goldust, a lot of guys
Lanny Poffo.
Lanny Poffo all had, like, pseudo homoerotic characters, you know.
Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels was a like a dominatrix midget, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, you know what? I don't have a problem with that. You know, I have siblings who are gay. I have uncles, aunts, cousins.
I got friends that are gay.
You know, I don't care, dude. I'm happy. As long as he's happy. And
as long as you're not doing it in the ring,
right?
Then I don't care.
As long as my 5-year-old, my 6-year-old doesn't see you doing it, then I'm fine. Yeah. Let him make his own.
You know, but who knows? Maybe he can. Maybe he can state some claim that he's the last surviving member, as Joey Styles would say, the last surviving member of the Terry Garvin School of Self-Defense.
Oh. Or the Pat Patterson punishment class, you know?
Well, hey, you know, Steve Lombardi was the star student, according to Gorilla Monsoon.
Oh, that's terrible.
He actually did say that. I forgot what match it was.
I remember hearing that. That's pretty funny. Oh, my goodness. But, again, I don't have a problem with that.
And then Lord Alfred Hayes backed him up.
That's right.
Pun intended.
Backed him up. His lordship going to the back door.
Oh my God!
We can do these jokes all night, Dave. There's no need. All right,
just doing double duty.
All right, you can email the show turnbucklethrowbacks1@gmail.com.
Anyone who emails the show
about tonight's show, I meant
about anything, literally.
Yeah, let's give a prize out. Let's get some feedback on the Twitter. TBuckleTBacks. Dave, what's your Twitter handle?
The Mr. Powers.
Right. Email, you know, tweet Dave or I, and they'll find out. Of course, we're getting active on the Facebook page. We have, you know, we have Phantom Trivia on it now.
New administrator.
Yeah, he's been laying out, he or she, we don't even know.
Dr. Executioner X Jr., PhD.
Yeah, PhD of Phantom Trivia. Phantom Trivia is going to be a big part of the page. We actually got contacted that there's a lot of trivia out there, apparently, that you guys sometimes can't or are not able to Google. You're going to have to work at it and earn your shit.
Who would have thought, after all these years of wrestling, there's all these questions about it?
Well, he knows who the smart guys are, this executioner guy. He knows that you and I are,
You know, I found him on Craigslist, and he's pretty good. I like him.
I don't even want to hear about you and your Craigslist episodes, all right? I know it's on there, all right? You freak.
That'll be my own personal podcast.
Anyway, October 5th, Dave and I will be at the Legends of the Ring Fan Fest with the Shining Wizards Network. October 5th, 2013 at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Monroe, New Jersey. Doors open at 8:30 a.m. Dave, the list of superstars is insane. Dusty Rhodes, Ricky Steamboat, Roddy Piper, Farouk and Bradshaw, Jake Roberts, Ivan Koloff, Queen Zone, Matt Stryker, David Sammartino, The Rock and Roll Express, Brother Love, our stablemate, PJ Polacco, you know him better as Just Incredible, Joseph Parks, Esquire, Steve Blackman, and I believe that's it.
And you forgot Handsome Harvey Whippleman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Harvey Whippleman, the Brooklyn Brawler, Taylor Hendricks, and Sonny.
And I'm hear, Steve Lombardi is taking applications for the Terry Garvin School of Self-Defense.
He is, and hopefully we'll get him to come on the Turnbuckle Throwback Wrestling Podcast. One of these guys, or a few of these guys, are going to be talking to us, because we're going to make that happen. We'll have the network there. Also, a cross-promotion show with us and the Midnight Jury is in the works. We're going to be doing the 20th anniversary of Halloween Havoc 1993.
We're working hard, day and night, to make this happen.
Yes, so...
trying to avoid a Turner Home Video VHS of it.
Yeah, Mike and Adam, I want to try to have them up for that convention that we're going to, because they're in Philly, and Philly's not that far from Jersey.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Exactly. Maybe we can all make that. Maybe they can come to the convention or the day before. That's going to have to happen because those guys are really cool. All the great shows on the Shining Wizards Network. You have us, of course. You have the Midnight Jury. You have the Neckbreaker Podcast. You have the Fallen Angels finally making their debut. You have Just Incredibles Pro Wrestling 101. And you have, of course, the Shining Wizards.
And what about that deformed hosts, the 2.5 wrestlers? There's some sort of mutation going on, right?
Yeah, there is a mutation. Jay Silva and Kevin Matthews are doing their thing. Buck cannot fit into their schedule lately, so Pat's been doing his own thing, which I think is fantastic. And their last couple of shows were really good. So God bless those guys. God bless the rant. Good stuff.
God bless America.
And God bless America. Summer's almost done. New season, new throwbacks. Dave and I working, like Dave said, day and night. So
relentlessly.
Relentlessly, yes.
I'm building up a sweat right now talking about it.
Easy killer, easy. Dave, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir, for having me on.
We will be back hopefully next week working on some good stuff. Look out for the trivia. Interact with us. We're social networking whores. And we will answer your stuff. We're not shy.
I ain't hiding from nobody. You know where to find me.
That's right. Nobody got time for that. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got some big things in the works. So stick around and listen and hopefully you might learn something.
And you know what? God may have your soul, but your ass belongs to me. That's Ron Simmons right there from ECW.
That's fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, that's episode 34 of the Turnbuckle Thrumrice Wrestling Podcast. On behalf of the Mega Powers, I am, of course, as always, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, bidding you a farewell. Take care of yourselves and each other. And Dave, avoid the clap. All right?
Bon voyage.
Peace out.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is the Black Scorpion, and when I'm not looking for Sting, I'm listening to the Shining Wizards podcast, shiningwizards.com. Be a mark, buy the shirt. I'm coming for you, Sting.
Neckbreaker Podcast! Neckbreaker Podcast is a pro wrestling and heavy metal themed podcast. Guest interviews, wrestling headlines, and metal news while your hosts Brian and John get completely fucking shit-faced. Past guests include Eric Bischoff, Fit for an Autopsy, Power Glove, and many, many more. Join them exclusively on the Shining Wizards Wrestling Network. Neckbreaker Podcast!
Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Please check out my boys Mike and Adam, hosts of the Midnight Jury Podcast, the only podcast that transports you back to the last old school generation as they debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. Before the internet, before Blu-ray, before cell phones, there was the last old school generation. So check out my boys on the Midnight Jury exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. Hey, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out two professional wrestlers, Pat Buck and Kevin Matthews, and some other guy, Jay Silva, giving insight to the wonderful yet corrupt industry of pro wrestling. Check out 2.5 Wrestlers, the bad boys of podcasting, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. Hey guys, Phil Rea here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out Pro Wrestling 101. It's a show about the ins and outs of pro wrestling, hosted by 20-year veteran of the Squared Circle, Just Incredible. Now, that's not just the best, that's not just the coolest, that's Just Incredible on the Shining Wizards Network. Hey, Phil Rea here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Listen to Wrestling Soup every Thursday night, 10:15 p.m., live on WrestlingSoup.com. Anthony Missionary Thomas, Joey Numbers, best fans in the world,
It's a complete shitstorm. Trust me, I know. It's got everything. It's got bitches. It's got bagels. It's got retarded women. It's got everything. Check it out. WrestlingSoup.com. Wrestling-news.com. That's right. Wrestling-news.com. Those are my pals, Don Tony and Kevin Castle. One of the best shows on the planet. Spot on predictions. Awesome, awesome commentary. And they're a bunch of cool dudes. Check them out exclusively on wrestling-news.com. Live every Monday, right after Raw, 11:15. Tell them Phil sent you, and you'll get completely nothing for it. Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out my two buds, Will Sweeney, Chris Espo, Tattoos and Touchdowns, All Football, All the Time, every Tuesday live, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com. Tattoos and Touchdowns, baby.